Hey, happy to be checking in again with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for another one of our Techie Talks. How are you, Tacky?
Hey, Joe, it's good to see you again, and happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, happy August, too. Here we are. My gosh, the time's flying.
Oh, it is actually zipping along now in August. And as the legislative schedule goes, and the speakers decided to give us August off, unless it's an emergency in terms of formal sessions, I'm just happy to get this far, actually.
Right, I know. Any more discussion about in person at the State House?
No, we're still waiting for word from the special committee that both the Speaker and Senate President appointed about reopening the building. As you've seen, the Delta variant has been somewhat of a concern. I'm going to be polite because it's scaring the hell out of me. And its spread rate. And obviously, people who are vaccinated are infectable, but can't be infected. But obviously, many of the people have very mild symptoms, very few hospitalizations after vaccination. The concern is very simple. It's a transmission. So the original Delta, the original COVID virus, seems funny when you talk about version one. Right?
I know.
The vaccines were very effective in preventing transmission. So you could be infected, you may be asymptomatic, you may feel fine, but you've been infected and vaccinated. But the key is that you don't transmit.
Right.
The viral load can't rise to a higher level. Your body attacks it so fast, it can't rise to viral manufacturer level that you can breathe it out and give it to others. Delta variant is a big question mark. Are you transmissible, even vaccinated, asymptomatic, and give other people Delta? And that's the huge question mark, which is why this recommendation from CDC about mask wearing has popped up. Again, mask keeps germs to you. Very important.
It's pretty simple too, you know.
It's very simple. So yeah. You may be a carrier, you feel wonderful, you may be vaccinated. If Delta is transmissible on vaccinated people that feel great, this becomes a mass question.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Provincetown cluster is a perfect case study of that. It really is. It's like a kind of all enclosed microcosm of what could happen with this variant.
Absolutely. Well, what happened is that you have a situation where one person in your company gets infected. The instinct that the rest of you all should have is get tested.
Mm-hmm.
So some folks may feel perfectly fine, but one of your friends has symptoms and you're like, oh, I was with this person. I better get tested. And then you find out you've been infected, but you're perfectly okay. And this is the thing about Provincetown that's scary, is that it actually created an interesting test subject because so many people go into that event with other people they know.
Yes.
So contact tracing was very different in that situation.
Yes, it was excellent. Yeah.
Very excellent, because very different situation, because I would move in groups and hotel reservations and all that stuff. You can start figuring out who's who, where to find out what's going on. But the key thing is, no hospitalizations, no deaths. Just people not feeling well, not knowing they're feeling, not feeling anything at all.
Right.
And that's why the Provincetown case is probably the most interesting case on planet regarding the vaccines and Delta virus.
Yeah, really. I mean, if scientists were going to conduct a study, that really would have been it right there. So, great learning experience for sure.
And yes, I had been to Provincetown. So I had asked some friends who've actually gone to these Provincetown events. And I was like, and it's a small town, it is wall-to-wall people, and you are crammed together.
Yes.
So outdoor events are great unless you're hugging someone.
Right. It literally was shoulder to shoulder, as to the pictures that I saw, yeah.
Yeah, but outdoor doesn't help as much regarding transmission of virus when you're that close outside. Right. So, that is a huge contributor, which is the Lollapalooza event in Chicago?
Yes, yep.
Is that where that's going on?
Yes.
I mean, they're requiring proof of vaccination. A lot of question about indoor concert events, sporting events, need to really reevaluate. Although, some of those places have better airflow.
Right. Yeah. So I guess it begs the question, should there be mandates here in Massachusetts for masks and vaccines?
Well, I don't think we need to go to a mask mandate just yet. I do believe that people who are feeling somewhat uncomfortable or may have been in an area that may have had Delta virus should probably wear a mask because of transmission opportunity. Again, if you, a mask helps keep germs to you. So if you think you've been in a area that infected Lake Provincetown, probably keeping away from folks and wearing a mask is probably a good idea. Just because eventually we know this is a 2-week incubation period, maybe 3 on the outside. Hence, you know, we saw everyone was away July 4th. Big surprise, just about 2 weeks plus, all these symptoms and infections came up.
Right.
So if you were in contact with someone like that, you probably should wear a mask to keep your germs to yourself.
Sure. Yeah.
For everyone else, yeah, I mean, if you're uncomfortable, again, you should wear a mask. But the vaccination rate in Massachusetts for people over the age of 21 is in the 70% zone. Everyone over the age of 12, you know, puts us in the 63-64% zone. Vaccinations have slowed in Massachusetts, but it's still not stopped. With the K through 12 section, of course, whenever they become eligible for vaccination, it skews the whole percentage of people who are vaccinated because it's only eligible people vaccinated.
Right. Yep.
So I think that there should be some comfort level. And again, I mean, it does protect against the Delta variants in the sense that they have a very low probability of hospitalization and death. No probability, just low.
Right.
I think that's a big factor here. And I'm feeling that mandating vaccination at some point down the road is going to happen regardless because the need for boosters.
Yeah, that's a variable that I think the CDC is trying to determine before the start of school. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah, I predict more than once that by school start, we'll have K through 12 vaccination.
Yeah.
Well, the news, the FDA wanted more data, meaning they didn't think the sample sets were big enough. So Moderna and Pfizer have gone back to extend their studies. So that means it probably delay a K through 12 opportunity for emergency authorization to probably around Columbus Day Halloween zone.
Right.
If we're really lucky to be able to get those new data set studies going for the FDA. So it's good to hear there's this precautionary approach by the FDA. I think people are like, oh, they're going too fast. They're suddenly making us. And the fact with children, they are looking for more data is indicative of that they're doing the job. They really aren't rushing. In the sense that people think of how rushing a job is. But there's also, what about that K through 12 emergency authorization? I think it will also delay when they provide full approval for these drugs as well.
Yeah, yeah. Can we talk a little bit about some state issues on your agenda? I know there's lots of stuff going on in committee. There's interesting issues right here in your district in Quincy. August Moon is coming up this month, so there's a lot going on.
Yeah, you said August Moon. So August Moon's on August 15th this year, down at back in Cottington Street at Quincy High. It is a trimmed down event. To my knowledge, this is one of the first major Asian events in the state to go off. I know Lowell is still trying to figure out how to put together the Water Festival. I have to check in with them to see how that's going. And I'm not aware of Chinatown being able to do an event this year.
I haven't heard they have, yeah.
So much kudos to Philip Chung and the staff and the volunteers over at Quincy Asian Resources to be able to at least put something together to celebrate. And I talked to Philip, and it's going to be a good-sized event.
Yeah.
Sadly, I am unable to get supply chain for my campaign giveaways. As people know, I give my Tacky Chan fans. And regretfully, this event was put together such late notice. It does take time to order stuff.
Oh.
And get volunteers.
Yeah.
And my friends, no surprise, are kind of traveling a lot every weekend. So I will be there for the opening and say hello and greet some folks. But you will unfortunately not have me around to collect goodies from my campaign table.
Oh, no, so, tacky swag. That's too bad. Nothing left over from 2019 you can give out, tacky.
I do some extras, but not that many extras.
Okay.
Spares I keep in the stairs. But,
it could become collector's items. Who knows?
Well, people are still holding on to a fan from 2010. I'm shocked they actually can hold a fan to 2010. They're not made to last a decade. But no, next year I'll be back if things are okay. I'll be back in full force with, you know, all my fans and other swag.
Okay.
that I normally bring out. But right now, unfortunately, it's just going to be a meet and greet in my case.
Okay.
With 12 o'clock start, 2:04 ish in front of Quincy High School. Got a minute stopping by. It's an outdoor event. I'm sure people will take proper precautions as they kind of move through the crowd. But it's also, I think, maybe a little smaller event too, because anybody who's actually gotten through on a Thursday afternoon going on Route 3 South, I mean, it's wall to wall Cape.
Yes, the Thursday is the new Friday or Saturday, I guess now.
I had to go to some appointments on Thursdays on Route 3, and it's like once you get to like on the edge of Hingham, it goes from 3 to 2 lanes. It gets crawling.
Yes. Yep. A lot of folks trying to extend their weekends, I'm sure, as the summer wanes on.
Weekend too at some point, but
yeah.
But Cumberland, let's talk about Cumberland Farms and the package stores ballot question.
Okay, that sounds good.
So those, you're aware, I chair a committee that oversees the alcohol industry. I've talked about supply chain and alcohol with you all folks multiple times. And one of the questions that came up last year was a Cumberland Farm question to expand beer and wine liquor licenses to basically unlimited statewide. So the Massachusetts Package Store Association, which is the alcohol stores, I filed a ballot question this week to expand the number of licenses over a decade from 9 to 18 on beer and wine licenses, with a special caveat for people who have up to 9 food liquor licenses. There's like this interesting grandfathering clause. And they are submitted to the Attorney General this Wednesday, because all ballot questions had to go to the AG this Wednesday, that they're going to submit for the 2022 ballot.
Oh, okay.
If it clears the AG, then they can start collecting their signatures. So one interesting phenomenon that happened this week that didn't really hit the news is that as a result of the Package Store Association question, Cumberland Farms did not refile their question on unlimited beer and wine alcohol licenses for retail.
Because they wouldn't need that, right, if this one is approved?
Good question.
Oh,
I've been thinking about the strategy of this for a few days. The idea is that historically, the Package Store Association, alcohol retailers, have always played defense against alcohol license expansion. For people, a little refresher for everyone, for you, is that each community, in the state, for each corporation, you're going to have 3 total beer and wine licenses originally, or 3 all alcohol sale licenses for retail.
Per community?
Per corporate entity in the state.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
That was changed about a decade ago.
Okay.
Increase that to 9 beer and wine licenses.
Okay.
Per corporate entity in the state, which is why, as many people may notice, there's only 3 cappies like for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You won't remember that because they only got 3 licenses per corporate entity in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's up to 9. Starting a decade ago, that went from 3 and gradually rose to 9. And now the discussion about whether we should go from 9 to a larger number. The system of limiting total license available creates a valuation for that license for the purposes of transfer resale. So let's say, Joe, you have a liquor store approaching retirement age. You've had this license for 40 years, and there's an unlimited number. And someone's wanting to be a liquor store, there's limited numbers, so someone's going to pay you for the right of access to your license, and with contingent on transfer approval by the city or town.
Okay.
So there's a market value. Every time you increase licenses in there, it affects the market value.
Oh, sure. Supply and demand, right? Yeah.
Correct. The more supply and demand. And you're going to see this in the city of Boston. We are still predicting, and I think we're still right so far, is that the closure of restaurants to hold liquor licenses are going to dramatically change the value of license valuation transfers in Boston, because they were going as high as $450,000
at one point
pre-pandemic. That price has been cut by 50% last November.
Is that right?
And I think it potentially could go down again this November as restaurants continue to be very challenged. I was on Boston Street like 3 Fridays ago now on a Friday night, and you can get a table anywhere. And okay. I'm looking at Max Brenner's chocolate thing is closed. we heard the poorhouses closed a while ago. I'm just looking at the street at all these closed restaurants.
Yeah.
And those are restaurants with liquor licenses. And if you can't open a new restaurant, those licenses hold no value.
Yeah, I see.
So no one can buy it from you. So the same principle applies to retail liquor licenses too. So you're going to start increasing the total market of retail licenses. It decreases the value of the existing ones.
Oh, okay. So in Cumberland Farms case, they may be doing more harm to themselves than good.
Well, in Cumberland Farms case, it's not that important because it's not the pinnacle of their income.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
The same thing with supermarkets. So like we go to Stop and Shop in North Queens, they have a beer and wine section. That is an ancillary profit for them. They don't have to sell that alcohol at extremely high margins. The state prohibits you from selling below wholesale value.
Okay.
Below the wholesale in Massachusetts. So, obviously you want to make some money. They're not going to sell you at cost.
Well, right.
So the markup is very different from going to a liquor store.
Interesting. So they use it as a draw, basically, to get folks in to buy the more expensive items.
That's correct. Liquor stores' primary product is alcohol.
It's in the name, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It may be a bag of chips.
Right.
You may grab a lime while you're there at Wally Liquors, right? So it's two models. People tend to think, it's not important. No, it is very important because if all alcohol stores were all supermarkets, then to be equal footing.
Mm-hmm.
And now places like Target, which has a grocery component, Walmart has a grocery component, BJ's has a grocery component. Mm-hmm. And obviously they're interested in getting into the alcohol game as well. And actually, oddly enough, in supermarket, people need to understand this. They keep trying to, the last time I saw them, they're trying to explain this and they weren't getting it. If a whole bunch of Walmarts and BJ's type stores get alcohol, it's going to eat into supermarket sales.
Yeah, it will. Sure. Folks are only going to the supermarket to get their alcohol and they won't go there anymore.
Correct. Because you can go to BJ's and Walmart and Target because they'll expand the grocery section immensely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Cumberland Farms bill would have done. They basically tied it to basically a food selling.
Mm-hmm.
Sales bill, really a demonstration of what makes your food selling store. So if you've been to the one in South Bay, Target, that's a massive grocery section.
Mm-hmm.
And you're competing head to head across the street with the Stop and Shop still there?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I can't remember sometimes. So, Stop and Shop. So, it could be easily competing head to head. If they're incentivized to have more food, they're going to eat into supermarkets. And you got a Target going to North Quincy. It's a small Target, it's not like a mega Target.
Right.
I mean, if there's an opportunity for them to get a beer and wine license, they may decide to expand the food options, being in a kind of a dead zone as a food market, to attract more people to the store with beer and wine, plus the normal non-grocery goods.
It's all about convenience, right? One-stop shopping. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of certain industries have this myth that, the expansion of beer and wine doesn't hurt them, but the competition market of food stores have changed dramatically in the last 20 years. It's not as simple as just a supermarket anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this final question is interesting. It also resulted in Cumberland Farms not filing the ballot question. It's kind of like a preemptive strike situation.
Yeah.
Where the package stores move first, put a proposal on the table, and then wait and see what happens. If Cumberland Farms had filed a second proposal to put on the ballot unlimited alcohol licenses out there, now you have two competing bills. And the question to the public is, do you want alcohol flowing everywhere, or are you willing to have a limit in alcohol flow, period? And that can create an interesting question for the public to choose between a much more limited approach, which historically we've been living with our entire lives,
mm-hmm.
or do you just want to open the floodgates and have absolutely, total new Wild Wild West type world?
Right. Yeah. I can see where the small package stores would be very concerned about that. Yeah.
And if you present those two questions to the public, limited expansion, but still limiting liquor licenses, or you do unlimited liquor licenses, and this is just beer and wine liquor licenses, to the public. What is the public sentiment? Should we have teetering blues where, you know, underage drinking, potentially more drunk driving could occur? Or do you like the idea that, sure, we should have more retail availability, but we don't want it in a way that results in over accessibility?
Yeah. So today is the deadline then for the AG to determine if it goes to the ballot?
No, the AG has a few months to look at. The questions went in this past Wednesday.
Gotcha. Okay.
So since Cumberland Farms did not file their question like they did 2 years, it's been 2 years. Wow. Since 2 years ago, and the package store is the only one that's done it. It potentially could be one question if they get their signatures, because they can still withdraw the question.
Okay. Okay.
So we'll wait and see where this takes us. Because last year, Cumberland Farms withdrew their question because they didn't pursue any more signatures. And there was a pending court case regarding whether or not their question was overly broad, because the Constitution requires a ballot question to be a single question.
Right. Yeah.
A single topic. The Cumberland Farms alcohol question was actually very comprehensive, rewriting actually a sizable chunk of the alcohol industry, including how excise taxes are collected.
Okay. All right.
It was a little more than just give you more licenses, give you more licenses, plus all these additional caveats to changing the current statute. So we actually never got to an answer because they drew the question before we got to an answer.
Gotcha. Because they saw it was probably doomed from the beginning. So yeah. Okay.
Well, it was a COVID problem. They would have to spend substantial money to get the rest of the signatures.
Sure. Okay. I'm just reading Tacky too. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's one topic down.
As we're speaking, I'm just reading about a story about gig workers, app-based businesses, Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, whatever, looking at a ballot question that would give them some more, I guess, employee rights or benefits, if you will, but not calling them full-time employees. I'm not sure how this would work, but it's interesting to see if this passes as well.
Well, there's a California ballot question that went through last year, which was actually a little bit confusing for me, to be honest with you. Maybe I was overthinking it, to be honest. But California passed a so-called gig worker ballot question last time out, trying to better define what an independent contractor is. And you know, it was an interesting coalition push where you had these Uber-ish type app-based businesses.
Yeah.
We also had people who really were independent contractors and actors and so forth, you know, true gig workers, and trying to find out what this is. I mean, like, you know, people know I'm in the Screen Actors Guild. If you do so many hours in the Screen Actors Guild, you can qualify for a pension healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a nice gig worker, you can have other bennies. But what if you're not? Let's say you're a model. There is no models union unless you're a model to join the Screen Actors Guild, or you're part of an Estes or one of the other performance unions, and you're a professional model. And no one hires you as a full-time employee. So you're essentially you're a gig worker, you're a true gig worker.
Mm-hmm.
You may have an agent to get you your jobs, you know, for example. But where do you fall in this category?
Right.
Yeah, you see where I'm going here?
Yeah.
I tried to clean this up last year, but it was somewhat confusing, because on the flip side, you know, pro-worker people didn't like it because they want people to have full-time capacity.
Yeah, like, I understand, people, yeah.
But gig workers want flexibility. So
it begs the question, should they get the same benefits as full-time workers? Yeah.
Welcome to the problem of the independent contract law.
Yeah, gotcha.
You know, what makes you a full-time worker? So on the surface, on the description, as you know, just talking about it, it sounds fairly simple.
Yeah.
You know, in a matter of law, in terms of properly understanding it, you're trapped with a whole lot of court case law and kind of a vague statute trying to figure out how that case law works. People have talked about this over the years about independent contractors, and I can't truly explain. I know the law school definition is that as long as you don't control the employee's actions, it's a contractual agreement, and a person's allowed to pursue other jobs, even in the same competitive marketplace that the person's in, you can do that. So, I mean, most classic examples like landscapers. right? I mean, you can hire people for the day, but that person can also work for another landscape.
Okay. Or, I mean, we've seen many cars that have Uber and Lyft logos on them. No, yeah.
That's correct. And yeah. If you say that you can only be an Uber driver, you cannot work for a competitor. You know, the question is, are you an independent contractor anymore?
Right. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. Let's see where that goes.
And these Lyft and Uber and others have really changed our mindset and dynamic of what is an employee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually a much more complicated question in today's world than it has ever been.
Right now with, remote work as well. Who are you responsible to? Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I really want to talk about, Tacky, too, is the whole census/redistricting issue and where that stands and where it's going. Sorry, but it's going to have to be dealt with.
Let's see if I can explain a complicated problem for reps that the other constitutional officers don't have to deal with.
Okay.
So the state constitution dictates residency requirement. It tells you, literally tells you, how many years you have to live in the state and where you have to live to run for office. And if you run for office, what the conditions are of your residency if you win office. So if you get elected, it actually tells you your residency requirement. This is not unusual. I visit other countries that has democracies, and it's actually very interesting how different places define what a residency is, right? Mm. So for reps is the only one of the entire constitutional set. We actually have to live in the district physically for one full year from the date of the last election. So this year, November 2nd, is the election day. So for you to run against me, you have to live in my district on November 2nd and prove residency on November 2nd this year for me to you to run against me next year. This is not a requirement for other constitutional officers.
Not senators, just reps?
Just reps. This is uniquely a state constitutional issue. Other groups, particularly senators, actually can move into the district at any time to run for that seat. There is no residency length time. You do actually have to be in the state, I think, 2 years as a resident, but you can, for lack of a better, carpet bag in at the last second, change your registration, you know, acquire residency by renting an apartment or buying a home right away, and then proceed to collect signatures under that address, new voting and home address, and then, you know, you get on the ballot. You can't do that against the state rep.
Okay.
So the problem is very simple. Normally would have the census numbers to cities and towns this past spring. They would have their piercing lines drawn by start of summer or early fall and approved by the city council. I do not draw precinct lines again, okay? This is, last time this happened, I was getting blamed for something I have no say in. Cities and towns draw the precinct lines. And pursuant to the Constitution, they have to keep those precincts as equal as possible. And In some cases, some communities change the number of precincts.
Yes.
They get more and they get less. And Lowell right now is the biggest city that has created precinct lines for the first time pursuant to a civil rights case regarding inequity of minority voters to get elected because they only had citywide elections and not precincts. Precincts improve the odds of a local resident getting it. Mm-hmm. So people are like, well, what does that mean? Well, if you have a citywide election, people all come out of the same neighborhood, one neighborhood, because it'd be the highest voting neighborhood in the geographic zone. People kind of pull behind that one neighborhood. So you could have all your councils come from one geographic area.
Hmm.
Precincts and wards prevent one neighborhood from controlling city council.
Interesting. Yeah, I know here in Quincy, I've talked to the city clerk. She's anticipating 5 new precincts in the city because of the increase in population.
Yeah, so choices create more new precincts or make the current precincts bigger.
Right, which I guess she said anyway, by state law, there can only be 3,400 per precinct, 3,400 people per precinct.
Then I think we may be making more precincts.
Yes.
It's extremely possible that we will be making more precincts. So why is this important, folks, regarding the residency requirement? Well, given the fact that the senior towns have not gotten their data to create the new precincts and vote upon them, the state reps and senators' districts are based on the precincts. So, you know, 3,400 try to add that together to get me to a 44-ish thousand people is how you would do it. And we have a margin error of 2.5% on each side of the magic number.
Okay.
But we have a bit of wiggle room on each end. The House has proposed changing the law to use census blocks to make our precincts. Make our districts. Because the census block maps will be available by September 30th. Although I saw a Twitter report from NPR I get some stuff on Twitter from NPR stating that it may be available by August end. Maybe.
Okay.
Then I saw a date for like September 23rd. So I don't know what's going on in the census. But the problem is that they will get the data, the city towns will get the data so late for them to whip together precinct lines for us before November 2nd. When the law has to be passed by November 2nd, signed into law by November 2nd to meet that residency requirement is a law order.
So what's the difference between the actual census and census blocks?
They don't look anything alike.
Really?
So for example, the census block, when we talk about census all last year, I was talking in terms of census blocks. I was looking at my census map, talking to you, well, actually written down my little card of all these data. However, when you look at the data, you have to be conscientious of taking the city number and not the census block. Because in West Quincy, the census block includes half of Milton.
Oh, really?
Same thing happens in Germantown. It stretches down to Point to North Weymouth.
Oh, okay.
So for example, for the speaker, you know, to hold on to Quincy Point, he has to take Germantown under a census block.
Interesting, okay.
Not all of Germantown.
Really?
Yeah, this is a problem. And not all census blocks are created equal. So for example, we know for a fact that places like West Quincy on the Milton border has extremely high response rate.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a very low response rate in that Brewer's Corner geographic zone.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the Blue Hills, which is sparsely populated. Census block isn't divided by population, it's by geography.
I see. Okay.
So you got a little people that live on Bunky Hole Lane, that whole Blue Hill section is a census block. It's a very low population.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got a very low census block, and then you like low census block, high census block, you can have this very stringy looking strange district now, which splits precincts because the city is going to have to create own precincts. And there's an argument saying that we're going to have to write the precincts for the city and towns. Sort of. Because if we use a census block and you have a very low number of census block that crosses into a neighboring community, the city is going to have to split that census block like they normally do, because they've always split census blocks by municipal lines. And then they would have to fill it of other census blocks to create that precinct.
Yeah.
Since census blocks are not precincts.
Yeah.
You can see the confusion now.
Yes, I can see why the cities and towns need to go first also.
But you have a constitutional problem.
Yeah.
So the Constitution dictates that we have to have these lines ready for the next election, in that case, the 2022 election. This is not a problem for all the other constitutional officers but us because of the residency requirement.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, and it's too late to change the Constitution.
Because that takes 6 years.
Right.
So for reps, you know, if we delay drawing the new line, so let's say to January 1st, which is actually feasible, and before nomination papers come out, you could have senator and reps lines drawn, and you would know what a senator's district looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, the residency requirement is you just have to move in. It's no 1 year requirement. This is problematic for reps because you have a potential constitutional challenge because we didn't have lines. We have lines ready for the 2022 election, but you can say we rigged the lines for the 2022 election because we did not do it in a manner where anyone could predictably meet the residence requirement.
Yeah.
So we could be challenged on that. So there's nothing in the law that says we cannot have, nothing constitutional says we cannot have our lines ready by January. We do have to have lines, new districts approved before the election next year. The district next year is where I'm going to be running it. But the residency requirement could create a constitutional lawsuit against the entire house.
Yeah.
Saying that we rigged this because we knew what the residency requirement is.
Right, right. Okay. Wow. Okay. So the sooner the better for those census data.
Yes. Even if we got the census data this month in August, in theory, with new computer systems, and I know there's political wrangling among counselors and selectmen and so forth, in theory, they could probably get it done by early October, maybe 2 months, maybe 2.5 months. And we all have computer systems too now. It's no longer crayons and rulers. And we have even guesstimates from cities and towns and plug into the computer. We could whip together the districts pretty fast. It gets more troublesome for districts that have lost population, particularly everybody who lives in Western Mass.
Right. Yeah.
Now you're speaking towns like 200 people to get like 200, 100 to try to get to 44,000.
Yeah.
If you're like in like Pittsfield or bigger, one of the bigger communities out there that has like 20,000 or 30,000 people in the community, you know, that's a little bit easy. Just kind of like snip the edges, trying to grab small communities around you. You know, so that's where a lot of the challenges are. In places like Quincy and Boston and so forth, I mean, I'm against the ocean. I mean, unless we're going to count lobsters, flounder, and seals as part of my constituent voter base, you know, there's not much you can do to me. I mean, I've always considered the fact that my district will have minimal changes because oceanfront, and I'm only city of Quincy, and I think I have decent name recognition citywide. So I'm never wicked concerned. It's not like I move into a new community like Milton and nobody knows who I am.
Right, right.
It's like this reintroduction. Right. And this happens in particularly in Western Mass, where you're a rep and you suddenly pick up four towns. And they don't know who you are.
Yeah, no, I can see. I can see where that would be an issue. Yeah.
So once again, back to the residency requirement. So let's say that there was an open seat, a potentially open seat. This someone else is not going to run again this year. Announced it this year, they're not going to run again. And we write a district up in Western Mass in particular. And let's say some person, one of those towns, was eager to run in for this open seat. And we move that person into a place where there's an incumbent already. This person was prepping for an open seat, but we draw the line. They could make the argument we intentionally, probably didn't intentionally do it.
Right.
But we denied him his constitutional right to run for an open seat.
Yeah.
That argument could be made.
Okay. Stay tuned.
It's going to be very crazy September and October for us regarding redistricting. Very crazy September. And we may not have a lot of time for us to reveal everything going on because of just the crunch. Again, if the census actually even got the data to city and towns this month, the clerks could get moving on the computer systems, get the lines drawn.
Yeah.
And have the council fight over it, you know, for the month of September. And then we'll, you know, give us a chance to fight next among ourselves.
Right, right, right.
Over the ocean. So it's nothing to fight about. To get these lines together and then, you know, get it on the governor's desk by November 2nd.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, another issue is polling places too. I know that city and town clerks are looking for places, you know, schools, churches, function halls, police and fire stations, places to actually set up these precincts.
Yeah, and it's getting tougher and tougher.
Yeah.
To find locations because you need a handicap accessibility. You have more voting locations, need more poll workers. Poll workers are very much short on supply. As we all know, a lot of our older friends are poll workers. COVID has not been a positive thing for that demographic. With Delta variant, we talked about earlier, floating around, that makes it even scarier.
Yep.
You know, it is safe. You can work a way to be more safe voting in person. You just got to be more patient when you go vote.
Right. Yeah. Fortunately, there will be early voting. There will be mail-in voting. So there is that option again this year.
and I remember correctly, Quincy will have a preliminary election for the school committee.
Yes.
So, you know, we'll have our first test run in a relatively short time period regarding mail-in voting.
Right.
In the city of Boston, this has become very crucial because of the fact they have a huge preliminary for mayor and councilors, as well as it's going to be a very big final in Boston. There's a major city on mail-in voting. As you also see in New York City, their weird ranked choice voting did mail-in voting also for that election.
Mm-hmm.
And it went fairly smoothly. Mm-hmm. I mean, took long. Ranked choice voting slowed down that process, not mail-in voting because of the nature of the county. But the but yeah, I mean, people did really well. The city did a great job last year, and they have no reason not to believe it would be not a great job this year. It should be a great job again.
Yeah. I know you're pressed for time today, Jackie, but anything else you should touch on right now?
Oh, there's so much things to touch on right
now. There is. I know. That's true.
You know, my Facebook, you know, the Jackie Chan Facebook, if you want to see how my public hearings run, you know, we are posting my public hearings live. So there's transparency, even though we're not in person in the building. And people seem to enjoy watching those public hearings and pretty fascinated by the topics that I take on. So people, you know, as the chair of a committee, I mean, people will ask me, you know, what does it do? And it's actually a very complicated answer because of the volume of non-related subject matters.
Mm.
Not deal with a committee that things touch each other, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a committee of a very variety of subjects, and it's kind of hard to explain. I always hit the big stuff when people talk, but, you know, for example, you look at the hearing from Monday, there was a lot to talk about, actually not Monday, 2 Mondays from now, 2 Mondays. So that would have been the last Monday in July. There was talk about things like what a peer counselor is for licensing, what defines a peer counselor, and then, you know, beer chair warranty, lemon law update. And, you know, these are actually pretty interesting consumer issues and licensing issues. What action, you know, the committee decides to take, I don't have an answer yet, but I mean, the testimony was actually very interesting and provides some insight for us, as well as the fact that we do have meetings with some of those individuals that you see in the public hearing after the hearing, particularly people that are attorneys, engineers, you know, experts who work in industries. To give us more insight about how things work. So I know the QATV sometimes published some public hearings. I remember you guys had one with me in it. I didn't know I was on a QATV until I walked in the studio back when we could do that more freely and saw myself there like, oh, I didn't know you had that recording. So, and I behave better there than I behave here.
This is, you know, Tacky Unplugged on this podcast. Yeah,
this is a much more professional behavior, I think, than my fun Tacky Talks with Joe. you know, and we're doing a little hiatus in that for 3 weeks. We'll start back on public hearings August 30th, and I'll probably have to run another 8+ public hearings right into the edge of November. But we're hoping to get most of these public hearings done by October. Then we'll probably run another set in January as we're running the schedule. In the meantime, we've got to exec bills out. You actually get to watch how we actually vote on bills in this really poor format. In person, voting for bills is easier because it actually is faster.
Mm-hmm.
This format doesn't make it faster. It actually slows us down. So we've been doing slate voting with people to raise objections to bills prior to the slate approval. So everyone's recorded on the voting sheet the way they want to get recorded in the votes. It's not so much that people don't vote. It's that we want to make sure they're voted. They're recorded correctly on our sheets.
Okay.
So one of the challenges I have is to ensure that if you have an objection to a bill, that we record you properly, because, you know, that's disrespectful. You're not getting recorded properly. Make sure that we actually work very hard to accommodate members to ensure the proper recording.
Yeah, you're like the orchestra leader, the conductor, if you will.
It is. It is somewhat like that, because you're managing the hearing traffic. And the chair has enormous flexibility about testimony, meaning, you know, how long you can go. I can cut you short. I can give you a few more extra minutes. You know, I control the line of questioning between the membership to the public. The public is not to debate each other. This format, you know, people can start unmuting themselves randomly and start like intruding. And this is not a public debate between people.
Right. That gets chaotic really quickly if you allow that. Yeah.
Yeah. There was an attempt to do that. And they kind of had to put that down. But membership asks questions, and there's a whole procedural component of how the committee members ask a question. And even just even the dead silence part, we've had incidents with technical difficulty, and you can watch me sit there, and all of us sitting there is dead zone. It's like, okay, what do we do now? We're waiting for the guy to get on. We got to just.
What do you do? Right. Yeah. A little song and dance. Do tap dance decking.
In person, we can always engage in some conversation, or I could bring up another testifier.
Yeah, or a sing-along perhaps with Tacky, you know.
Sing-along, whatever. You know, as soon as we get past all like the, you know, by the way, here's the future schedule, looking at email box, all the administrative stuff. There's really not a lot to talk about. And then the Monday hearing of the 28th, I had technical difficulty. Zoom kicked me off for about 15 minutes.
Oh, geez.
So my co-chair had a pinch hit, take over the public hearing as I'm trying to resolve how come I can't get back on. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Zoom has a feature to prevent bombing.
Yes.
So now the anti-bombing feature was keeping me from getting on. So we had to stop playing with the software trying to get me back in. So again, I want to go back in person desperately, as you can hear. But you can see some real life stuff on my Facebook to see these public hearings. You don't have to watch all 4 hours. I mean, you can skip around. But, you know, it gives a little bit of insight of these public hearings.
Yeah, and it's like Tacky on demand.
It is. but I don't think anybody loves me that much to be on demand.
Or, of course, call your office, send you an email.
Yep, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. That's the office number. Mash a button. We'll get to a staffer. We'll figure out, you know, who gets it next when you hear from us. Tacky.chan at mahouse.gov, tackey.chan at mahouse.gov. We should really talk about my email next time, exactly what volume of email I have. But, you know, I work very hard and try to sort through, again, priority issues or constituent concerns.
Okay.
Always constituent concerns, people with problems that need some help solving. And they're still flowing in, as well as the fact they get an average of somewhere between 20, 25 pieces of testimony per day, on top of people's policy requests, on top of all the so-called junk mail and briefings and all this other stuff. So, and internal emails. So it is, we're still in high email system season, but we could do a whole segment about that next time, about the horrors of email.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm sure people could relate. No question.
Yep. And we got it on tackychin.org. Again, we put some social service numbers up there, contact points for you that may be more efficient than trying to find me if you can find information there.
Okay.
And of course, we have Kiwi TV. So, I mean, you can see us on YouTube.
Absolutely. Now, next time we talk, I want to talk about the hate crimes task force I'm just reading about here. So there's stay tuned.
Stay tuned. We have more topics ahead.
All right. Good to see you, Tacky. Thank you so much.
Good thing. I'll see you in a week.